The Local Thread. Welcome to The Anderson Hour, part of WGTE's The Local Thread. On today's episode, Jerry looks back at the series Rethinking Jails and Justice. The topic, trusting in our justice system.
America incarcerates more people than any other country. And the problem begins in local jails. Jails have become warehouses for people who are poor, lack housing, or suffer from mental illness or addiction. Uncomfortable yet? Oh, then there's this. They, referring to local jails, starkly reflect America's long history of racism. Welcome to Rethinking Jails and Justice, a radio forum produced by WGTE Public Media. Now, those strong and troubling words are those not of me, not of WGTE. Those are the words of the Safety and Justice Challenge, a nationwide challenge to rethink our local jails. And that challenge, accepted nearly 10 years ago here in Lucas County, Ohio, seeks to reduce local jail populations, to do so safely, and to reduce racial inequities in the populations of our local jails. My name is Jerry Anderson. Starting back in April, we've been taking deeper dives into questions you submitted to a 90-minute town hall meeting streamed earlier this year. Now, we've explored issues including police reforms and gun violence, mental illness and substance abuse in the criminal justice system. Huge, huge issues. Innocent people wrongly convicted, and the reentry of prisoners back into our society after sentences are completed. We've had some tough, but productive, I think, talk about youth crime and gangs. Rethinking Jails and Justice doesn't pretend to solve such thorny issues, especially not in the confines of a one-hour discussion, but we do try to inform, raise awareness about root causes of problems plaguing our justice system. We have spotlighted programs right here in our community that seek to address the issues we raise. Some of these programs are garnering national attention. We think the discussion is part of the process, just as the Safety and Justice Challenge, a product of the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, has been a process here in Lucas County. And here in Lucas County, the home county of Toledo, the local prison population has indeed been substantially reduced by nearly 40%, we're told, without an accompanying uptick in crime, without a spate of missed court appearances, or the accused slinking off into the shadows, never to be seen again. Those were worries. They haven't happened. Now, a large racial inequity in the local jail population, we're told, does continue. So today, we're taking on another very large issue facing our criminal justice system, the issue of trust in our system. Let me ask you, do you, our listeners, do you guys trust our system? Why? Or why not? And along the way today, we will highlight still more rather amazing programs that work with people, many of whom harbor mistrust. Maybe a lot of mistrust. Maybe with good reason. Maybe not. But which provide a place to turn to in society. Turn to if turning to society's established institutions of criminal justice is not something they would like to do. So welcome in on our program today. I want to welcome in the prosecutor of Lucas County, Julia Bates. Ms. Bates became the first woman prosecutor to be county prosecutor back in 1996. And that was after having served 20 years as an assistant prosecutor, to which I say, what were you, 14 when you started or what? I mean, we're going back some there. She has since been reelected, we think, 7 times?
Yes.
All right.
This is my 8th year.
Eighth term. Yeah. She also
became
the first woman elected president of the Ohio Prosecuting Attorneys Association in 2003. Good to see you. Welcome in. I've been looking forward to having you here.
Thank you.
Also here, Tremaine Rayford, founder, CEO of The Program, Inc. Now, it's an organization that works with mentors, if you will, fatherless boys and young men in many ways. I love this. We talk. Everything from teaching them to tie a tie, to change a tire, to even managing money. Stuff our dads taught us, right? Or didn't, if they weren't there. Montrese Terry, director of the City Park League resource group. Montrese, I promise that'll be the only time that I use the full formal name. It's City Park League, right?
Absolutely.
For our purposes.
Or CPL.
Well, we can do that. Starting with kids playing basketball in what is now Savage Park?
That is correct.
His organization helps young people to use a sport to, and I love this too, bridge communities one dribble at a time. Those same youngsters now go throughout our town. They clean up neighborhoods. They're financially rewarded for doing so. And in so doing, they're learning how to become young entrepreneurs, many now preparing for college. Dr. Brian Lovins is a criminologist earning a PhD in criminology from the University of Cincinnati. He is president of Justice System Partners, a nonprofit organization that works to improve the criminal and juvenile justice systems. He's on our phone line today on the road. Dr. Lovins, good to have you along. So welcome all in, Prosecutor Bates. I have been looking forward to having you here. You were not part of our live stream town hall in January, and somebody from the crowd that night in the McMaster Center, Montrese, you're laughing because you were there at the main library downtown. Yeah, where's the prosecutor? So let's start by clearing that up. You'd have been there if you'd been invited.
Absolutely.
Okay, that was news to me. Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, I didn't know anything about it. I heard about it well after the fact, and I heard about it because somebody was complaining and criticizing the fact that I should have been there, and I should have been there. I guess they didn't think I was worthy of inviting. I don't know.
They did not run the guest list past me, but I did tell the audience that night, because I believe we are aiming toward a future town hall. I said, you want the prosecutor here? Prosecutor will be here for our next one. We've just dealt with each other over the years. This young lady doesn't skirt, you know, the issues. So I just wanted to put that on the record. She wasn't there because she wasn't invited. Still, the hard work your office does. I'm thinking about this, Julie Bates. I mean, okay, the cops go out and catch what they say are the bad guys. They collect the evidence. I know you have your own investigators as well. You guys build the cases. Then comes the safety and justice challenge, questioning why do all of these people, not convicted at this point, have to sit in local jails, rotting, awaiting trial? Couldn't, shouldn't some, many of them be allowed their freedom? As a prosecutor, doesn't that just kind of annoy you?
No.
Okay,
no.
Why not?
Well, the jail is for the people that are the most dangerous to our society, who need to be there because they either can't make bond, their bonds are high, they're a threat, they're a danger. Many of the people that we see every day in our work are not that dangerous. They're suffering from mental issues, they're suffering from drug addiction issues, they're suffering from poverty issues. So there are many things, and these people that are sitting here with you have offered some great avenues for prevention and for change. But the people that are in the jail need to be the people that we are protecting society from. But again, they're innocent until proven guilty. So, you know, we can't just lock them up and throw the key away either.
Our local jails largely serve as pre-trial detention centers. We're going to hold you for trial.
Right.
You are technically innocent, and yet we do know, and this is why, as we've talked about before, the Safety and Justice Challenge has things like the risk assessment teams that can go in and assist you all as judges in knowing, because everybody on the program over the last 4 or 5 months have said, oh, there are some people that we're going to agree we can't let out. At this point in time, the risk is just too large. That's not very many out of the entire amount of people that get arrested and jailed.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Brian.
Yep, Dr. Lovins.
One of the interesting pieces to that is just 50 years ago, our jails actually were the opposite, and about 30% of the people who were sitting in jail were there on a pretrial, and about 70% had been convicted and serving a consequence. And in the last 50 years, that actually has switched. And about nationwide, about 65% of the people sitting in jails any given time are actually pretrial people who have not been convicted.
Mm-hmm. And as we have discussed in a program earlier, you touched on it, Julie Bates, the whole idea of mental illness and substance abuse, it is estimated that some 70% of people sitting in a local jail And if not Lucas County, if you're sitting out there, we have a big, broad signal. You're out there. Your county has a jail, too. And so we should be asking these questions in all locations. Some 70%, if you take those with substance abuse issues, mental illness, or oftentimes the combination of both, that's 70% of the local jail population. I do want to come back to Julie Bates, but I want to get, let's get over to Tremaine from the programming. The kids you work with, do they have trust in the criminal justice system?
I think it depends on what side of the street you're on, right? Some of the kids from fatherless homes are in the urban areas. In the urban areas, of course, trust is more, you know, you can really trust the law enforcement. In other areas, however, the trust is lacking. I remember a story one of my moms told me during the George Floyd protests. They were peaceful protesting and they got shot with wood pellets. And imagine being a 10-year-old kid being shot with a wooden pellet by law enforcement. Like, that right there can critical your trust with the law enforcement, you know. So it depends on what side of the street that you're on. But of course, there's a trust issue with fatherless young men and the law enforcement.
Montrese Terry, City Park League. CPL, tell me about trust from your point of view and the people you work with.
Well, first, just thank you again for this opportunity
to
sit amongst colleagues and folks in our community. And one thing about Toledo and Lucas County is it's a relationship base. So when we talk about trust and we talk about having confidence, it's really the efforts that leans around relationship building. Toledo Lucas County has been working on those ways to develop relationship, because when we develop relationships, it tends to reduce those issues of trust and having issues with our law enforcement and our residents. And what's some of those ways? Well, with the City Park League, we're creating activities and events and meeting in common spaces where law enforcement and residents can really get a chance to learn and get to know each other. So when we talk about relationships, we're seeing a lot of interaction with community-based relationship activities and events.
So Tremaine and Montrese, to you both, for those of the people that you deal with in your programs, you can be that person that they do trust, bridging the gap to people they don't trust.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I'll give you a case in point. Just here in the last few years, Mom's House would have the Hoops for Heroes basketball game,
yep,
which was law enforcement, yep, and fire and rescue meeting with community members in the basketball game. And then the other one was a few years ago, it was called BLAST. It was called Bringing Law Enforcement and Students Together. So when we talk about initiatives and events that's consistent with bringing these entities together, we tend to see the numbers reduce.
Yeah, we've participated in the Mom's House, the Oops, police here. Versus the...
And we also have PAL, the
yeah,
Police Athletic League.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and they
yeah,
grew, and they're it's a tremendous organization.
Yep,
you know,
certainly,
these officers that give of their time, and they coach these teams, and we have, you know, baseball and soccer and basketball, and started with boxing. So it's a tremendous
Dr. Brian Levins, trust in the system. Why is that important anyway, if it is?
Yeah, no, I think our friends here on the call explained it well, like that you have to have a relationship, but trust is legitimacy, right? And I think what we've created historically in this country, sort of falling back into the Jim Crow space, that police are there to capture, or it's sort of us, them. And what we're starting to see is communities recognizing that police are part of the community and not against the community. And so as we want to build trust with people and we want to build connections, you can't build trust and connections without relationships. And so I think that's the crux of our criminal justice system response to crime, or response to calls to service even, is all surrounded around the legitimacy of the relationship. And if you know, it's like someone walking up to you, you're at a park and you're a parent and someone walks up to you have no relationship with and gives you parental advice, you're not going to be really open to accepting that, right? But like my parents pull me aside and say, hey, Brian, you know, with your 12-year-old, this, like when we have relationships with people, we take feedback from them. And when we don't, we feel us versus them. And I think for us as the criminal justice system and sort of responding, we've got to build more about we and less about us versus them.
Hey, Jerry, if I could, I wanted to ask you, but also Prosecutor Bates, one of the things that we often see, and now on the national stage with soon to be possibly Kamala Harris, the prosecutor office and her second chance initiatives, is there in our community, does the prosecutor office has initiatives to kind of reduce these numbers? We always talk about laying the hammer, but under your leadership, is there opportunities that second chance or other initiatives from the prosecutor office to kind of deter some of those factors?
Absolutely. And, you know, COVID changed some of those projects because we were in the schools for years and years. Since Joan Coleman ran our victim assistance program, we started in the schools dealing with gun safety and gun violence, dealing with bullying, dealing with drugs and alcohol addiction, and dealing with teen dating violence and domestic violence.
And I can just tell you, just from the community and you sharing that, Prosecutor Bates, those type of conversations and campaigns and efforts, we don't really see, not knowing that that came from your office. And like you said, the pandemic kind of changed some of those things.
So many things that we were talking about with these kids, starting in the third grade.
Wow.
The only thing I will say, sometimes maybe our messenger wasn't the right messenger. To deliver those messages.
Okay, who was the messenger and what made him wrong? You know I'm going to go that way.
Well, I'm saying, okay, for instance, if you're talking to a inner city, predominantly African-American high school.
Gotcha.
A 50-year-old suburban white woman telling the story about drug addiction or don't use a gun maybe isn't resonating the same way. You know, and so we had to kind of learn that.
Yes.
Who needs to tell the story and who is the best person to tell it?
I think that, and Jerry, I think that is huge. And even Doc said it with this particular platform, we tend to overlook the tools that's there. Prosecutor Bates talked about who's the messenger, and you asked the question, how do me and Tremaine have an opportunity to bridge that? But also, when we talk about sports and recreational activities, those are tools that we can use to kind of, again, reduce some of the data, because people look at the data. You talked about 70%, and we talk about the numbers. Well, those numbers are lives, and those are lives every day that you and I are aware of, we're connected to in some form or fashion. So to your point, sometimes we have to use the tools that's right in front of us: sports, recreation, outdoor communities, who's the communicator and an influencer.
And we will hear more on this program about these programs that do work locally. But if you're talking about restoring trust, don't we have to start with, well, what breaks trust in the first place? You know what breaks trust, among other things? When innocent people are convicted.
Yeah.
They go to jail for crimes they didn't commit. And I know, Prosecutor, you're just doing your jobs. You have this evidence. Blame the jury. They got it wrong. Well, you well know the story. My colleagues at WTOL, take a bow, Brian Duggar, received national recognition for leading to the release of two Toledo men wrongly convicted in a murder case. For all of us who've ever said, and I bring this up because all of us who've ever said, I don't worry about that stuff because I don't commit a crime. Well, maybe that isn't good enough anymore. Maybe you can go down the river even if you haven't done anything. That should give us pause, shouldn't it? That's a big trust buster right there. Innocent people in jail. We had the head of the Ohio Innocence Project on this program a couple of months ago. Willie Knighton, well known, spent time in prison, later exonerated by the judge who sent him there. Somebody you know very well, the late and oh so talented Bill Scow. How do we address that?
Well, we started at Integrity Unit in the office, and we're not the first ones in Ohio to do this. We sort of learned from some of the other offices that have done this, but this is to take a new look at a very old case. Not just a case that's someone's languishing in prison, but someone who has either been granted a new trial or who is claiming to be innocent and has new evidence to prove it. we should be using today's technology and today's tools and the things that maybe we didn't have at our disposal 30 years ago to make sure we got it right. And
now, before you take too much credit for that.
I'm not taking all the credit, that's
because
right.
Because you kind of came kicking and screaming to the party.
Well, not so much. That just is some. That's maybe a little bit of a spin. But
the Columbus Dispatch in 2020, I read from the Columbus Dispatch of 2020, so I'm dating this a little bit. To the annoyance of Ohio Supreme Court justices, county prosecutors are refusing to take part in a task force reviewing how to prevent and reverse criminal convictions wrongfully won by prosecutors. Somebody you know, Appellate Judge Gene Zimuda, one of our guests back at the town hall in January, was on our town hall, and he said back at the time that he was, quote, disappointed but not surprised that the prosecutors were taking such a tough stance on this. Shouldn't we be less concerned about the defense bar getting, as was talked about, a second bite at the apple, and more concerned about doing everything possible just to get it right? It isn't about who wins, who loses, as long as we get it right. Go.
You are so right, and this has given me the perfect segue about this.
Okay.
That was a discussion and a decision made by the board of the Ohio Prosecuting Attorneys Association. That's 88 county prosecutors. There's about 10 prosecutors that are from big cities that have integrity units that didn't, I can guarantee, did not vote to not join that initiative. But you know, Cleveland, Akron, Cincinnati, Columbus, they all have integrity units. So I wouldn't say that I went kicking and screaming. What I would say is that I wanted to be very careful. I didn't want to open the floodgates and have everybody in town and in prison sending letters saying, look at my case, look at my case. We only have at this point one employee that's doing this and one investigator. But I think it could grow, and I think it should grow, and I think we deserve to get, I mean, the people in this community, we owe it to them to get it right. And if we didn't get it right, shame on us.
Only because I can't see him, and therefore I have no eye contact. Dr. Brian Levin's on our phone line. As you listen to this, would you like to weigh in?
Yeah, I think one of the problems that we've sort of established, we've backed ourselves into corners, is the metrics we use to measure success, right? And so I think about the prosecutors that we work with, and we haven't had an opportunity, obviously, to work with Lucas County folks as much, but mm-hmm. prosecutors we work with on the sort of what the metrics are for a prosecutor, conviction, right? Because they bring forward cases that they believe are true, right? That the person is guilty and that they're arguing for guilt. And we've created this metric that creates this sort of self-fulfilling process that says, well, I believe they're guilty because I'm trying the case. I wouldn't try it if it's not, and therefore it's guilty. And now we get harshness, right? We get, oh, the best case scenario is a guilty verdict and the greatest amount of sentence for the public good. And I think we have to reevaluate what justice means and how we define justice, because I would argue that pretty good evidence to suggest that incarcerating people, especially with people with substance use or behavioral health issues, is not actually leading to any better outcomes for people. There's actually some pretty decent evidence that you stay in jail for 3 days, you get worse with those diagnoses. And so I think we have to rethink the metrics around how we're operating the system to be less about harshness and more about justice.
Also,
Montrese Terry, City Park League, go.
Just real quick, thank you again for us having this opportunity to, excuse me, to have a very robust conversation, because when we talk about everybody and we talk about not having the capacity to address, if you would, a slew of individuals looking for freedom, I myself has a history with the justice system. So when we talk about those things and we're not in a position, I think sometimes we put the cart before the horse. We talk about these initiatives, and then we don't have the capacity to your point, commit to those obligations. And then it falls dormant, then we fall into a place of pointing and blaming. But what I will say about Toledo, Lucas County, for us to really, and to have Prosecutor Bates here, and Jerry, you putting this with the safety and justice challenge, us willing to have this conversation and discussion and talk about solutions mm-hmm. that will ultimately, it won't please everyone, but we know it will please and will help lives. And we're talking about here in Lucas County.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think thinking of solutions, so often we talk a lot. And I love action. I love what are our action items. But I do think we have to somehow get the justice system and the law enforcement and the community together and build on that. Everything is relational equity. So it's who you know, how you know. It's the relationship you have with them. And I think that's what's kind of missing in our communities.
That voice you're hearing is Tremaine Rayford. You grew up without a father.
Yes.
You saw him, what, twice or three in 18 years, the first 18 years of your life?
Yeah.
Which means he was absent.
Yep.
You were on the wrong path.
Yeah.
You're chuckling because Jerry just put that mildly, didn't he?
Yeah. And Montrese, me and Montrese, we go way back. So I didn't even know Montrese was, we're related. We're cousins.
And you find out down the road.
Yeah, 30 years later.
Relationships. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and we knew
if you
other.
Sit there and tell me, we were sitting in a jail cell and said, hey, you're my cousin.
Happens all the time.
Yeah.
Happens all the time. And in fact, just to that point of relationships, what we struggle with here in our leadership in Toledo and other areas as well, but Lucas County, is if there is a solution, the person that brings up the solution, if it's not under the idea of those who may be the decision makers or the gatekeeper, it doesn't happen.
Yep.
So where do we start when we have someone who may be able to lead the effort of solution-based ideas, and it doesn't have to be stuck on one person, prosecutor-based, because what tends to happen if it, using you as an example, we're using concrete, prosecutor-based, she's working with community organizations, and we know these things can help improve. We ultimately know that that will also reduce some jobs as well, too. So are we willing and committed here in Toledo, Lucas County, to really, you know, change the narrative with solution-based, even if it's not coming from the prosecutor office, but it's the prosecutor office working and collaborating with other community groups to reduce these numbers? Those are the type of questions and the conversations that we have to have, because a lot of our leadership, Jerry, if it ain't me doing it, I'm gonna give you a half effort.
Anybody know Sean Mahone?
We do. Yes.
He maintains his program that has people coming to him from all over the country. Can't get a second listen down at juvie court.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How can this be if it's working?
Unfortunate.
Tremaine, I want to get back to you because I left you there on a wrong path, and obviously it's not fair to you. He's sitting across the table from me. But it could have gone very wrong for you, save for some outside influences in your life, and I think we want to get there. Go.
Yeah. Yeah, I was on the wrong path, doing drugs, gangs. In fact, I was in a coma for 2.5 weeks because I fell off a balcony on drugs, and that's when I saw my father again. But had it not been for a gentleman coming into my life, I know me and Montrese go way back, but he talks about a gentleman that used to take him out of town and traveling and stuff like that. And this gentleman was someone similar to that, taking me out of town. Took me to Grand Slam. I don't know if you guys remember Grand Slam, but Grand Slam way back in the days, and go-karting and all these experiences.
Batting machines?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Basketball, you can dunk. 5 foot, you can dunk and lower the rim and all that stuff.
I couldn't, but.
But it was those types of things that he exposed me to that allowed me to see life bigger than what my neighborhood was. And through that, that's a lot of what we do in the program is we expose these kids.
That's where I wanted to get to, because you had an outside influence that probably saved your life.
Certainly.
Now you work with kids. And folks, in case you're wondering, it's the Program, Inc. I thought, well, how big is it? You have a waiting list of over 90 kids trying to get in.
Yeah.
So something's working. Other cities are now copying your model.
Yeah.
So what is your message to kids that is working?
My message to kids that it's working?
No, what is your message to these kids that seems to be working?
So we love, we're genuine, right? We're not, it's not about the funding, although we need funding to do what we do, right?
Right.
But it's about these kids. Like, to them, they're, to us, for them, they're valuable to us. We're genuine in our approach. Everything's fun, and how we mentor and how we steward them is just in an innovative way. So, you know, teaching gun violence, we actually take kids to the gun range, and we have speakers talk about, we had a board member who's been shot twice, and because he's been shot twice, he talked about, you know, him being around the wrong people. We talked about gun safety. They actually got to shoot a gun. They learned the proper way of handling guns so that they know when someone's mishandling a gun. You don't want to be around someone who's waving a gun around and not knowing the basics of gun safety, right? So teaching them things like that. We just had a tug event, it's back to school event, and we gave away backpacks. You know, a lot of people do that, but we also talk about the tug of peer pressure, the tug of gangs, the tugs of drugs, all those things. Because I don't just want to equip them to do homework, right? I want to equip them to withstand all the pressures that include going back to school. So, and we do tug of war. You know, who doesn't want to do tug of war in the glow in the dark? So, everything is fun. We make it innovative, but we make it also a learning experience for these kids.
We talked about the chasm of trust because of wrongful convictions. Here's another one, and this is what most people, I think, when we talk about trust issue, I think they go right away to cops. Mm-hmm. A chasm full of mistrust involving our police agencies. I mean, we recorded with the police chief, Prosecutor Bates, sitting in that chair where you are last month. Did a nice job, Mike Trendley. He was also at our town hall last winter. And it was in hours after that the Sonya Massey story broke, blown away in her own home after calling, she calls the police for protection. And then last week we just had the 10th anniversary of Michael Brown. Remember Ferguson, Missouri, folks? Unarmed, shot and killed by police a week after graduating high school. Oh, yeah. We should probably mention, we all watched the life being suffocated out of George Floyd, who, believe me, we all saw the video, was in no position to pose any threat to police at that time. So from each of your points of view, when black parents are having to coach their kids how to act and react if stopped by police for fear of them being killed, how do we ever build a bridge of trust there?
That is a good question, Jerry. We have to do better. We have to do everything that these two gentlemen are doing and everything more. And if every neighbor, if every person does one kindness, if we, you know, in my neighborhood, we have signs now that say, with a big heart, love your neighbor. I mean, I love that. And we have to be better. We have to be kinder. We have to be gentler. We have to be more compassionate. We have to help our neighbor. We have to do more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jerry, when you talk about boots on the ground, and we talk about not just black families or communities of color, because it's widespread, it's highlighted when you talk about black and brown community. But here I will say, if we can get it with our law enforcement to, again, they are taught in the academy and throughout their service, public service, discretion and assessing the situation.
Yeah.
If we really can put those two practical situations in play with authority or governing areas, assessing and discretion, because you just mentioned some very monumental historical moments in our lifetime, that if we would have acted with discretion, or if we would assess the situation, hot water with the Massey, at a distance. There was a young man going through Sylvania Academy at this time, and he said, in our conversation, he said the officer had the ability to back up if he thought she was going to throw hot water on her. You could still, even though the gun was pointed, he still could have backed up if that was armed. So when we talk about assess and discretion, when we talk about those.
One of the things that the Safety and Justice Challenge, and we talked about so much, and the police are very much, because usually that is that, you know,
Split second.
In retail, it's POS, point of sale. This is that point up, boom. And you can either escalate or de-escalate. Mm-hmm. And we are now, I'm told, training our police officers, getting them to go in there with the idea of we can cool this. We need to look to cool this. We're asking so much from our police officers. Yeah. We're asking them to assess, is that person a criminal or are they sick?
Wow.
Are they a drug addict? Are they mentally ill?
By the way, they could be,
as Scott Sylak said, hey, Jerry, not everybody who has a mental illness is a criminal or is going to become one. But the people with mental illness do commit crimes just as
regular people.
The population at large.
So Jerry is, and Doc is on the call as well. Are we in a time that governing and policing communities and neighborhoods is changing? Are we open to seeing, when we talk about assessing situations with mental health and other factors, are we in a time that the time that things are changing on how we police?
Let's get Dr. Brian Levins in. We've covered a lot of ground since you chatted with us. Jump back in, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a mixed bag, right? I think we think of police, we think of education, we think of prosecutors, we think of courts as a single system that operates the same across the country. And really, we have 2,800 different unique systems that operate pretty much independently. Even within a county, judges operate independently, individual actors operate independently. And so I think to build trust, we have to create an environment that everyone's operating similarly situated, and we don't have that. But what we do have are places across the country that are doing more community-oriented policing, that see themselves as guardians and not warriors. And I think the militaristic approach to law enforcement, our sort of response, again, to harshness, a call for service comes in that a person is experiencing a serious mental health issue, and we go with guns out, right? Because the problem is the police, to do healthy work, you have to be healthy. And our police systems, our correction systems, have not invested in helping staff be healthy. And so you can't engage in that environment very well if you're afraid, or if you're fearful, or you have PTSD, or you've been told at every check-in point, every status check with your team, be careful. You know that violence is up. People are against the police. And then that's the rhetoric that you're going outside with, and then you see someone move, and you're automatically, we're all going to protect ourselves. And so I think where the way we start building trust and the way we start building legitimacy for law enforcement officers and correctional officers is getting them the services and support they need so they can be healthy. So when they engage with people who are struggling, there's not two unhealthy people in that space.
I was going to get you there, Dr. Levins, because I know that is part of the four pillars of the program that you lead out of the University of Cincinnati. We recently had that issue in Toledo in which the city was offered an armored vehicle. Law enforcement said, hey, this could protect officers, maybe medical personnel, should they have to go into, say, a barricaded gunman situation. But many community voices saw that vehicle as a weapon to thwart legal, albeit uncomfortable at time, assembly, protests, if you will. And yeah, the more you look like the military, sometimes the more you act like the military. By the way, we love our military for protecting us from foreign adversaries. Let's be clear about that. But their job is far different than that of the local police to protect and to serve us. And as I looked at that, I thought, well, this whole issue goes to trust. In essence, people didn't trust that the police would always and forever only use the vehicle in the manner they said they would. Reactions?
I agree. Trust. It's perception. What's the perception of that? The argument was, yes, we're not going to take it to a lawful assembly. We're going to only use it in certain very unique situations. But what is the perception of this war vehicle driving around the streets of Toledo? I think it was a bad visual.
Voices were heard. Council turned it down.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. and the thing that gets me is us trusting them, but really it's them not trusting us. Why else would you need a tank to, you know, assess a situation when I just personally believe training and like Doc said, he said, you know, so that we don't have two unhealthy people in the situation, to do more training and equip these law enforcement officers with all that they need to assess situations and not need a tank, which is going to cause an uprising in the community.
Dr. Brian Levins, I'm a sports fan. We have sports guys in the studio with us today. So I'm going to invoke, Brian, if I can, your coach and referee analogy. There's something to this that really, and I'm going to start off, you run with it, and correct me if I'm wrong, please. But think about it, guys. Referees, we believe, are impartial. They don't play favorites, right? They know the rules. They actively look for violations of those rules. They penalize those who break the rules. Well, think of that as our criminal justice system. But a coach, on the other hand, is an advocate. He's pulling for one side, his player's side, and there's a coach over on the other side pulling for their players. He's showing how to play the game without breaking the rules. Brian Levins, expand on that, because you say there is a half century of data that says we've got it wrong.
Yep. We've created an entire criminal justice system. I think the front end should be somewhat impartial because they don't know what's going on, and they're representing, they're coaching the community. But as we start to engage with people, impartiality becomes a problem because we don't care about the outcome, right? If you think of a referee, we don't want them causing an outcome of the game. They're right. Just reflecting what they see. But a coach is invested in winning. It's invested in, and what I believe is that all people are trying to do their best in their life, and that if we can figure out how to help them win without breaking the law or hurting someone, then we are, our criminal justice system is a much different place. And so imagine a law enforcement officer, a probation officer, a corrections officer, someone working in the jail who sees themselves as a coach, keeping this person from engaging in crime. And let me be clear, though, right? Like, coaching is not about letting people do, and I think that's been sort of the crux of the last 4 years in the cancel culture, is that we're canceling the criminal justice system because we don't like the way it responds at times to people. What we should be thinking about is how to build a system that responds to people well. And good coaches hold people accountable.
Yes, they do.
Any of the folks in the room, like, what do we call a coach that doesn't hold someone accountable?
Hang on, Brian. You guys, did you hear the question? What do we call the coach who doesn't hold people accountable? Do we have an answer in the studio? If not, you're on, Dr. Levins.
A Dallas Cowboys coach.
I knew it was coming.
That was a great segue.
He got me on that earlier. That is
an ex-coach, right? It's an ex-coach. It's someone who gets fired. Like, yeah. Coaching takes accountability, but caring as well.
Matrice, I want to get back to something also along these lines. You point out that in Toledo, we are doing a better job of connecting people with not just, we're getting people out, police officers out of their cruisers. The chief sat next to me and said, Jerry, we ask people to volunteer. And he goes, you understand that means getting out and walking neighborhoods in 95 degree heat and all of your mm-hmm. gear. And I had people lining up to do that. You see the value of that, but I'm going to lead you into this. You also see questions regarding, how did we put it? The second and third shifts? Go with that, sir.
Well, thank you again for the opportunity. And one of the things that I, in asking that question here in our great city and county, is, are we mandating our law enforcement? So first, let's back up off of our officers a little bit, because the men and women are connected to us. They're our families. They're our friends from across the spectrum. We also got to educate our community and our neighborhoods to, you have to be willing as well to be connected and knowing your officers. And that's something that I think along the line that I would like for us to discuss before we end, when we talk about solution-based. But when we talk about law enforcement in most of our central city areas, we do not get a chance to connect with the second and third officers who's working those beats. Is there an opportunity when we talk about how we mandate training for the detective unit or the gang task force? Are they just coming into the neighborhoods to make an arrest? Or are they willing to know my mom, who's willing at a drop of a dime, if she is feeling threat or something going on in the neighborhood, she's the first one to call them to say, hey, something's going on with my grandkids. There's something wrong with my neighborhood. Can you get over here and take a look? But are we willing to invest and not make an excuse when we ask for second and third officers to know the community?
You have indicated that there is a willingness to even connect the population with not just the beat cop, but shift commanders.
Yes.
Well, you say that's daytime stuff. When you think about it, it's the easy stuff in the light of day. The sun goes down, and the police officers who come in on the second and third shift come loaded for bear, because that's where trouble happens.
Absolutely.
You see that?
I have, and I'll say one thing about, and giving Chief Craw his due, former Chief Craw, right. Police Chief.
George Craw.
George Craw. His second in command, his lieutenant, and I, please forgive me, I'm getting a little older, so I think I'm prosecutor-based things don't stay on the top like it used to. Nonetheless, what was very beneficial, and I would like for us to consider that in using this platform, but it was know your officers. And what Chief Craw did, we had a community town hall. He assisted with creating the neighborhoods, and we were in the Scott Park District, the contact list from the second and third shift commander, lieutenant, da-da-da. So if you did not call 911, you had additional officers if there was a incident to contact. And I think a lot of our residents in our community and neighborhoods need to know who is the second and third shift, because we are in a time where people are forthcoming with information about if something's going on in their neighborhoods.
I may challenge you on that, okay, because I also have police officers say, we go into a neighborhood, there's been an incident, they know who did what to whom, and they say, nothing here, saw nothing here, for one of two reasons. Fear.
Certainly.
I turn on somebody, if they're about, they could come after me. Or a mindset that says, you know what, we'll handle this. Don't need you. They got one of ours, we'll get one of theirs, and then violence just begets violence.
Yeah.
Prosecutor Bates, where are you going to?
Well, no.
Please do.
I was going to say, I was at a block watch last night, and the neighbors were complaining about the juveniles in the neighborhood, and they were, you know, doing all kinds of mischief, and they'd call the police, nobody would come, nobody would answer, nobody cared, nobody did anything. Mm. And the officer that was there, he was tremendous, and he said, here are the numbers, here is the card. When I go to a call, I give you my card, I give you my number. We can do better. And, you know, that is a problem, what you're talking about, second and third shift. I can see that, because I heard from these people complaining. You know, 911, someone was shot, or 911, there's a little 12-year-old trespassing in my backyard on my rose bush. You know, there's two crews. Where are you going to send the crews?
Absolutely.
So that's a conundrum, but it's a real conundrum. So we have to deal with it, I think.
One other last piece, just to that a little bit of a kickback that you was giving me, Jerry. When we talk about cameras, we know in many of our areas and many of our neighborhoods, there are cameras up on those poles.
Yes.
We have found out through for whatever funding sources that many of them aren't working. So then we go back to the blaming residents, because nobody's telling us, when we didn't invest in a $50,000 camera on your street corner that is inoperable.
We could have had the information we're seeking.
Mm-hmm. So
the systems were working.
Accountability. We go back to accountability. And I don't know if Tremaine or Dr. Lovins.
I mean, I'm just enjoying this conversation, honestly.
And I have you coming in next anyway, Tremaine, because in your words, it takes a community to change a community.
Certainly.
Expand on that, and I believe you could use more community members and support to join your effort at the program. You have kids waiting to get in. These kids are not being forced to go there, are they? Are they being sentenced to go there by a court?
Nope.
They want to go there, and you got 90 kids waiting. Go.
Yeah, certainly. I think it's a little bit of, and before we go, thank you so much for having me and Montrese on the show, but a lot of, I think what needs to happen is a lot of what Montrese is doing, actually, with the City Park League, the, doing the cleanup and wanting to know who are the officers in charge and having that reciprocity with the law enforcement agencies and the community. So I think when we have this going back and forth of sharing information, going back and forth of sharing experiences together, whether it's citywide barbecue with you know what I'm saying, and having those officers there present and getting to know the community so that they know what's going on and who is who, so that when they do have to assess a situation, that they know the character that they're going to get. So I think that's one of the big things that needs to happen in our community, and I'm looking forward for that happening. I do think Toledo is changing. I think our law enforcement is changing, and I think that we're a growing city, and I think that, yeah, everybody's doing great pretty much, but I just think we need to get together and share that information.
One other thing about his program, working with the add-on piece, we tend to think it's just youth-led. We're all parents in this room. He works with the parents and families too, so it's youth and families. But one of the things that I just commend Tremaine and the programming get is that they're not trying, they know that less is more, Jerry, and not trying to flood the doors with that 90 just to have data and lies, but really being effective with the young men that's a part of the program and taking time with those young men.
Tremaine, thank you for also touching on something. In Montrese's program, City Park League, we talked about changing communities one dribble at a time. These kids are now going out and cleaning up neighborhoods. Yep. Yeah, who wants to do that? Get a kid today to go out and do anything. They're going out and picking up trash in some of the toughest neighborhoods.
Yep. Absolutely.
These kids are told to show up at 7 a.m. at 7:05, you're late. I mean, at 7:01, you're late. Mm. They are rewarded. You go out, get sponsorships. I mean, you get a half bag of stuff you've collected, you get some cash. You get a full bag, you get more cash.
Absolutely.
And now you're teaching kids to be young entrepreneurs. You're also cleaning up neighborhoods. This is a citizenship thing. You're building, you're growing that kid.
Absolutely, and thank you again. And so for about 9 years, we've cleaned up various neighborhoods, or at least 10 different zip codes here in Lucas County. So again, you said very much, pretty much what we do. They can find out more with the City Park League on all your social media platforms. So thanks, Jerry.
Dr. Brian Levins, your Justice Systems Partners seeks to keep people out of the system as one of the pillars. And then if they go in, you seek to get them out quickly and safely. You seek to help them find a path to success upon their freedom. But your fourth pillar, and you touched on this earlier, Brian, but I think we need to underscore this, because I think my friends in the police department sometimes saying, Jer, your fourth pillar goes to, quote, taking care of people who take care of people. I think I can fit that under a trust umbrella, but I need some explanation, a little deeper explanation of where you're going with that.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said before, if there's two people in the room and both of them are unhealthy, there's not going to be a good outcome. Yeah. And we can't, the people who live in our community are dealing with all sorts of issues. There's systemic issues, there's family, there's interpersonal, there's personal. And so they're generally, we're called, you know, the criminal justice system is called to spaces where people are struggling. And so for us to be able to manage the people who are struggling, we have to be at the best of our game. Look, as we said, we all have kids. I have kids. There are days when I'm not a great parent, let's be honest. You know, CPS doesn't, Child Protective Service doesn't need to be involved, but I'm not at the top of my game. And the reality, I'm not self-reporting anything.
I got you.
Do we have to give him his rights?
That's right.
Just kidding.
That's right. Yeah, no, absolutely, right? And so, but there's times when we're not at the top of our game, and we don't allow our staff to tap out. We don't allow our staff. We make them show up every day, and we tell them they are impartial, and they're not allowed to have feelings, and they've got to remain neutral. And the reality is we're all human beings, and we see really tough stuff in this field, and we see people who are struggling with life, and we see some of the worst things that you could imagine. And then we got to come back to that space one day later and do something that's courageous or caring. And I don't think we talk enough about the mental health and the behavioral health. I don't know if you all know, but prison staff, so people who work in prisons, have a 14-year shorter life expectancy than the people who work in the community.
That's
because
stunning.
They live in environments that aren't safe. And so for our staff to be safe means our people are safe, and we have to do better at taking care of the people so that they have a lens that is individualized, that's equitable, that we're treating black and brown folks or trans folks, any of the folks that look different than us, mm-hmm. we're treating them with respect because we're coming from that space, from a healthy space. And that's our fourth pillar, is how do we develop systems and practices for our staff to be healthy so that they can do the best work for someone else who's not.
We need to summarize. The clock on the wall says, as I said going in, we don't solve everything in the course of 60 minutes. But think about this tonight, as we talked about trust in the criminal justice system. We have identified several things that have violated trust. We have also identified that none of those issues have gone unchallenged. Is there work to do? Oh, yeah, there's work to do. But things are being addressed. I think I would walk away from this forum very depressed and downtrodden if I thought nothing's changing and nobody's trying. What I have sitting at my desk here, starting with the county prosecutor and Montrees and with Tremaine and Dr. Lovins, we have people who are making changes, addressing the very issues we're talking about. And I want to believe, it's the always optimistic Jerry, but I want to believe that better things come out of this because we talk about it on forums like this. Final thoughts around, please?
Just will say, when we talk about a utopia, what are some action items? Let's lead with this campaign with the county prosecutor office, with WGTE, two community-based organizations. Let's put together a campaign of initiative similar to, let's know the officers. Something as simple as prosecutor Bay said she went to a block watch. So when we talk about what came out of this, we talked about knowing the officers. And then secondly, prosecutor Bates, if there's efforts that needs to be revisited from your office that community organizations can help support your agenda, let's work on those. So when we talk about those practical things coming out of a discussion like this.
For me, it's that community can change a community, right? It takes a community to change. And if you're listening and you want to get involved with anything, I would just say volunteer anywhere. Our kids need to see us showing up. So, just getting involved.
Dr. Lovins.
Yeah, I would argue that what we did 20 years ago looks different than what we do today, and next 20 years will look different. And so I absolutely agree. We have to keep moving forward and progressing, using innovative ideas. And I think resetting for me of what's the job to be done versus what the job we're doing. And sometimes we get invested in the job we're doing, and we really should understand what's the job to be done, and that is to create healthy environments for people to do great stuff.
Prosecutor Julie Bates.
I love everything that you said. Brian Bird is my new community outreach officer. He was the former fire chief here and the safety director. He's there to try to help me and my staff and our job connect with the community that needs us.
To all of my guests, I want to thank you for joining us for our radio forum, Rethinking Jails and Justice. All of the very talented folks here at WGTE Public Media. I'm Jerry Anderson. Thank you, folks, for being there, and I certainly hope we'll talk again.
Thank you for joining us for The Anderson Hour, part of WGTE's The Local Thread. The Anderson Hour can be heard Wednesdays at 7 p.m. on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org. The Rethinking Jails and Justice series is produced by WGTE Public Media and is made possible by support from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation as part of the Safety and Justice Challenge, which seeks to reduce over-incarceration by changing the way America thinks about and uses jails.